Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
These two are definitely really close in the MVP voting. Not really mad at that one. You know, the fans had Harden, but slight edge. Westbrook is having a great year. He's definitely going to make the team. I'm not mad at this list. This one was okay.
These guys are having phenomenal years. No disrespect to them, but then it would be a disrespect to the two-time NBA MVP if you don't start them. So I could see how the fans and everyone could say it's equal, and then Steph wins out because of popularity.
100% disagree with both of you two. Russell Westbrook should be starting. That's no disrespect to Steph Curry. He's a great player. He's on a really good team. But what Russell Westbrook is doing, he deserves to be starting, plain and simple.
You've got to be able to understand that when you go on the road, you got a lot of elements to face. Hostile environment, the crowd, the weather, you just never know. We cherish that opportunity to go on the road, especially in the awesome environments like Gillette Stadium, with passionate fans that are going to be excited. And it's just something that you know you're going to have to deal with if you don't get the one or two seed.
There's always something going on. So I think it's important for us to focus on what our job is, and that's to go out and play well. You know, our job is show up and try to do a great job when we get the chance. And that's that's the way it's been all year for us. So many great players that I've stepped in the huddle with that, you know, are on defense, you know, have really helped us achieve, you know, all the success that we've had. It's a lot of people working hard, going in the right direction. I've been very blessed. We have to play our best game of the year. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, we got to all do whatever it takes to be at our best for those 3 hours on Sunday night.
You know, I don't specifically have to go out on the field and defend Aaron, which is a good thing for us, but it's fun. I've played against him a number of times, and I've gotten to know him throughout the years, and I respect him so much because he's such a great competitor. Regardless of the situation, he goes out there and he competes hard and plays really well week in and week out. You know, once we get into it, it's about, you know, trying to do the best we can against their defense, you know, focusing on how well we can play. And at the end of the day, that's where my focus will be at on Sunday.
I've been playing a little bit better and got some guys healthy, and everybody's been kind of raising their level of play. We've been more efficient and, you know, had a good year on third down. We had a good year in the red zone. We're on a streak right now in our red zone conversions. But it's just a matter of being more efficient, everybody and myself included. Yeah, they've been playing great on offense, but we just focus on the defense and how to be efficient against those guys. We scored points on them last time, especially in the first half. They kind of tightened up in the second half and sacked us a few times on third down. We got to do a better job, you know, playing a 60-minute game against them because obviously Matt's been pretty hot.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Pretty hot. All right, I'm speaking, but I'm not hearing myself. I wonder why. There's why it is. Okay, very good. I thought for a second, Jimmy, you have my microphone down? No, microphone's up. My headphones were down, though. That's the difference. Welcome as we launch our Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Pretty hot. Is that what Aaron Rodgers said Matt Ryan has been?
Yep.
Pretty hot. Are you kidding? Matt Ryan has been, to borrow Dan Patrick's old SportsCenter line, en fuego. Literally on fire. All right, not literally. Then you'd have to, like, call the fire department. It would be really messy and nasty, and he'd probably die.
Like in that Aaron Rodgers commercial.
Yes, indeed. Exactly right. Exactly correct. But talk about hot. Matt Ryan has been the best quarterback maybe this season in the league. And, of course, Tom Brady might have something to say about that, and so might Aaron Rodgers himself. And Matt Ryan has been spectacular. The question is, how can Aaron Rodgers call anybody else hot, considering what he has done for the last nine games, which might be the best nine-game stretch any quarterback has ever had? You know what I found myself doing last night, Jim Cushlin? And by the way, welcome as we do indeed launch. You just heard from a number of different people, including Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley, the TNT crew, on the NBA's All-Star starters, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And then you heard from the quarterbacks. Maybe the greatest collection of quarterbacks on championship weekend ever assembled. And that's something else we're going to have to debate a little bit, and I will with our guests coming up at about 3:35. But Big Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, you heard from Matt Ryan, then at the very end you heard from Aaron Rodgers. Those quarterbacks combine for 7 Super Bowl rings. 4 for Brady, 2 for Roethlisberger, 1 for Rodgers, and Ryan doesn't have one, but he might be the MVP for crying out loud. Probably will be the MVP this year, and might end up in a Super Bowl after Sunday. So At any rate, now where was I going with all of that before I got sidetracked? Was it about the, how hot they were? No, doggone it. I seem to have lost track of where I wanted to go with all of that. But I will then launch into the second part of that. And that is this the greatest collection of individual quarterback talent in any given? Oh, I remember where I was going with it now. It just came back to me. What I did last night. Last night I was just sitting around and I was listening to a podcast of Mike and Mike in the Morning, and they referenced the 9-game streak. And was it Jaworski, maybe? It might have been Jaworski on with the guys yesterday, who said that Rodgers has had maybe the best 9-game stretch that any quarterback has ever had. And you know what I did just on a whim? I went back and looked at 1984. Why do you think 1984, Kush? I'm going to put you on the spot here. What do you think I would have been looking for in 1984?
Montana.
Montana?
1984? Or Marino?
Marino.
That was the Super Bowl matchup, Montana versus Marino.
But that was Marino's 48 touchdown pass year, which set the record by a ton. 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns marks that now look, you know, like they're
pedestrian.
Still spectacular. No, not pedestrian. Because there's only been a handful of 5,000-yard games,
very
or seasons,
true.
I should say, by quarterbacks. But only two guys have passed the 48 touchdowns. And that's Tom Brady, who had 50 a few years back, and then Peyton Manning, who had 55 in his comeback year after the neck surgeries when he went to the Broncos. But that 48 touchdown pass stood for, you know, 30 years that Dan Marino had. And I remember, you know, 5 touchdown games, 4 touchdown games for him over and over. And I wondered, I said, I bet he had a 9-game run better than what Rodgers has been on. But you go back and you look at it, maybe not. Maybe not. Because within that tremendous year, that Super Bowl year, and putting up 5,000 passing yards and 48 touchdowns, he did have a couple of games where his completion percentage was only 55%, you know, 16 out of, you know, 27 kind of things, or, you know, whatever the, you know, I don't have them all memorized. Like I said, I just looked at his game log to see if there was a 9-game run. I suppose we could do that for Peyton Manning. When was Manning's 55 touchdown year? Was that 2012, I want to say?
Good question. I think it was
2012. Yeah, I think it was Peyton. I think it was 2012, because then 2013 and then 14, he won the championship with Denver. I think it was 2012. You might want to go back and look at that game log and see exactly how things went there. Let me
2013 in Denver was the 55 touchdown year.
All right, so 5,477 yards and 55 touchdowns that year. A completion percentage of 68.3%. Only 10 interceptions to go with his 55 touchdowns and only 10 interceptions. He had to have a run. I got to see this now, because now I'm getting off to, I know I tend to do this sometimes. I get off on a tangent, but, Peyton Manning's game log from 2013, because, before we start talking about the, NBA All-Star starters, because I want to see if, just off the cuff, you know, off the cuff here, if that might have been as good or a 9-game stretch as Rodgers said. Here we go. I've got it in front of me now. Peyton Manning, in the year 2013, when he had 55 touchdown passes, let me look for a stretch of tremendous play and see if there's a 9-game run. All right, you know what? I may go right off the rip. I may go right off the rip the first 9 games of that season. 27 of 42 for 462. And how many touchdown passes did he have in the opener that year?
I very much remember, because he was on my fantasy team that year. 7.
7 touchdown passes in the first game against Baltimore. Prime time, by the way. Then the next week, 30 of 43. That's 69%. 307 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. 32 of 37, that's a handy 86% completion percentage, with 374 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Quarterback ratings, by the way, those 3 in a row, 141, 105, pedestrian, 135. And then Philadelphia week 4, 28 out of 34, that's 82% completion percentage, 327, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, a handy 146 quarterback rating. Then Dallas, a 51-48 win, 33 out of 42, 78% completion if you're scoring at home, 414 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's 129.6 on your QB rating. Then Jacksonville, 35-19, 28 out of 42. That's 66%. Oh, geez. 295, two touchdowns and a pick, 92.9. Indianapolis, and that was actually all. There it is. That maybe this breaks the streak because of the loss.
Yep.
You'd have to have the nine game winning streak with this kind of these kind of numbers in order to say it was a better nine game run. But oh, by the way, in that loss, he was 29 of 49, 386, three touchdowns, one interception.
Oh man, what a bum.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? Then against Washington the next week, a 45-21 win, 30 out of 44, and 354 yards, four touchdowns. And that one he had three picks in. So that's six picks to that point. And then we get to number nine, the ninth week of that year, 25 out of 36, 330 yards, four touchdowns, and no picks. So a combined, just in those 9 weeks, let me do the math here.
I already got it up for you.
You added up the touchdowns?
33 touchdowns, six picks in that nine-game span,
and
71% completion.
And what was the completion?
71%.
Wow. And what was the yards per game? You didn't do that one, did you?
No, it's right there.
And not that nine-game run, 462, 307, 374, 327, 414, 295, 386, 354, 330, and that was at 330. That was the last one. Yeah, while you add that up, we'll try to just kind of – I guess we have to eliminate – I'm not going to do this for everybody. I just feel like it's prisoner-of-the-moment type talk to say that Aaron Rodgers' nine-game run that we just heard a lot of people across the country, you know, national analysts and so on saying – that this nine-game run he's on is the greatest run in the history of the position of quarterback. It sounds like prisoner-of-the-moment type talk to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just sounds like we always say that. What we just saw now is the greatest of this ever.
That's 361 passing yards a game.
So 33 touchdowns, six picks, 361 passing yards a game on 71% completion.
The quarterback
to me, that might be
that
better.
And the quarterback rating for that nine-game stretch, 121.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that might be better than the nine-game stretch, with the exception of the loss, the one loss.
Yeah,
and Rodgers, of course. What I think what makes his perhaps maybe mean a little bit more to observers, two things actually. One, he called it. He called his shot.
Yep.
He called the run the table shot. You know, a home run by Babe Ruth is like any other home run by Babe Ruth, right? Except for the one that he called. When you call your shot and hit a home run, suddenly that means more than your typical home run.
And for your historical purposes, that was Game 3, 1932 World Series at Wrigley, by the way.
Wow, look at you, Mr. Encyclopedia. Very nice. Well done. But do you know what I mean? That home run didn't count for any more runs than any other home run. But when you got the guts, the culianz, to call your shot and then do it, It's a little bit more impressive, and this was the called shot from Rodgers. We're going to run the table, and he has done it for nine straight games now, and he's done it with incredible numbers, and I'm not going to add up all of those. But it still feels to me like – oh, and then I didn't say the second thing. The second thing that makes this, I think, much more appealing to voters – or not voters, observers, is that the laser to Cook with the game on the line and an opportunity to win the game in the divisional game last week against Dallas – if he doesn't roll left and then have to roll out a little further and then somehow throw that 36-yard strike down the field right off at a spot on the sideline where it could not have been more perfectly placed and then get a perfect toe drag but knee raised, and that's it, an amazing thing. Toes dragging but knees above the ground out of bounds, that catch from Cook, then maybe we're not talking about this. But he did make that throw. And that did put a capper on, you know, this nine-game run. And it's not capped yet because now they still got to get through Atlanta and then possibly a Super Bowl to truly, quote, run the table. But it still feels like prisoner of the moment. The thing I saw that was outstanding now is better than any other outstanding thing that's ever been done. That's just the prisoner of the moment mentality we're in. I am, I won't say confident. I get a feeling. Or I get the feeling that if we go back to, you know, maybe a Dan Fouts game in 82 or 81 or 80 or something like that, you know, when you remember Air Coryell, or if we go back to a Montana run when he had Rice and Taylor at the peak of their powers, or even maybe what we might have to do, I just don't want to do it, though, because I don't want to do it on live radio. I'll have to do the work off the air during a commercial break. Is even look at Brady from when was Brady's? 2 years before that?
07, if you're thinking of the year they went 16-0.
No, the year that he threw 50 touchdowns.
Oh, okay, because I was thinking if you're looking for a win total thing, I was looking up some of his 07.
No, I'm looking for the year that he threw 50 touchdowns, because the things that jump out to me are...
That was also the same Marino year that was 48.
What's that?
That was the same year that they went undefeated in the regular season. That was the same year 07.
Okay, well, that makes some sense then. But I'm looking at, the Marino 48 touchdown passes in 1984, the Manning 55 touchdown passes that we just went through in 2013, and then the Brady 50 touchdown passes that he threw in 2007. And I can't believe that was 10 years ago, or 9 seasons ago, if you will.
Oh,
that
goodness,
blows my
yeah.
mind. Think about that for a moment. That's freaky. But there has to have been, or at least there is very possibly a 9-game run that might rival what we just talked about with Manning and with Aaron Rodgers.
And but to that end, real quick, the first 9 games for Brady that season, completion percentage 73, 33 touchdowns, 4 picks, quarterback rating 131.8.
Ooh, that even beat Manning's. Who was 121?
And they won, of course, all those games because this is the 16-0 year they had.
Now here's the question, though. Were those 9 the best 9? It didn't have to be the first 9. I just did that with Manning's because I'm looking at him, and it started off with the 7. I said, let's start there, in 2013. But Rodgers' 9 are obviously at the end of the season here, plus going into the playoffs. So, I mean, there might be 9 games, a 9-game stretch in that 2007 season for Brady that you're talking about that was even more prolific and more productive than the first 9. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just saying. I don't know.
The ratings down on this one. I went week 5 through week 13 of that year just now. 67% completion, 32 touchdowns, 3 picks, 119.
Okay, so a little bit lower there.
He kind of trailed off a little in the last couple of games.
Okay.
5 touchdowns, 3 picks in the last 3, so I'm kind of blocking those out.
This is a really fun discussion because what we are watching, I think we can all agree, and this is how we got off on the tangent, and doggone it, I wanted to talk NBA here in the first segment of the show and the All-Star starters that have been announced, but yet here we are. But I did see another story that really, is a great topic of conversation, that this is the most decorated group in a conference championship history, but does most decorated mean it is the best group in conference championship history? And if you advance that out, and this is something, again, they were talking about yesterday, I think, on Mike and Mike. If you advance, well, let's just do this. As far as the best Final Four in conference championship history of quarterbacks, I mean, Tom Brady's a surefire Hall of Famer. Ben Roethlisberger's a surefire Hall of Famer. Aaron Rodgers is a surefire Hall of Famer. Matt Ryan is not there yet, but again, he's probably going to win the AP MVP award this year. And if he has a couple more like this and grows into himself, he very well could be a Hall of Famer as well. So have we ever had 4 Hall of Famers in the Final Four in NFL history? We only have QBR, which is, quarterback rating, not the same rating you were talking about.
Right.
But the QBR going back to 2006. We can't go back to some of the great matchups of the olden days, if you will, when they really didn't count that. But just by reputation and rings and that sort of thing, Pro Bowls and whatnot, here are a few other to consider. In 1992, the NFC Championship game was the Cowboys' Troy Aikman against the Niners' Steve Young. And in the AFC, it was the Bills' Jim Kelly and the Dolphins' Dan Marino. That was in 92.
Okay.
And they're all 4 Hall of Famers. In 1970, Daryl LaMonica of the Raiders, Johnny Unitas of the Colts, Craig Morton of the Cowboys, John Brody of the 49ers. I'm probably going to go ahead and jump over that one. And not just because of the age of it, but some of those. Craig Morton, while he was a really good player, he wasn't in the class of some of the guys we're talking about right now. 93. Joe Montana of the Chiefs in the AFC, again against Jim Kelly of the Bills, Steve Young of the Niners, Troy Aikman of the Cowboys. So it's essentially the same guys, right? No, because it was Steve Young of the Niners in that one. This was also Steve Young of the Niners, but it just replaced. Oh, it replaces Montana of the Chiefs with Marino with the Dolphins.
Right, right.
81, Dan Fouts that I mentioned before, against Ken Anderson of the Bengals in the AFC, Danny White against Joe Montana of the 49ers. Neither Anderson nor White are Hall of Famers, so let's skip over that one. 95, Brett Favre against Troy Aikman in the NFC. Jim Harbaugh, who's got it better? Never mind. Harbaugh, the Colts against Neil O'Donnell of the Steelers. Forget about that.
Yeah.
And these are just the ones that ESPN threw together. And the last one to consider, 1998, John Elway of the Broncos against Vinny Testaverde of the Jets, Chris Chandler of the Falcons, Randall Cunningham of the Vikings. Now, they're using some different metrics here is why they're bringing these guys up, okay, because of the seasons they had at the time. They're using some of the analytics, things that you and I just wouldn't ordinarily look at. That's why some of those names are there. So I think, personal opinion, there's only two others that rival the current crop of four quarterbacks in the games this Sunday that combined for seven Super Bowl championships among them already. And that would be that 92 group, Jim Kelly, who ended up in four Super Bowls but lost them all, Dan Marino, who went to the Super Bowl as a rookie and never got back but set all the passing records and kept them for 30 years, Troy Aikman, who won three championships with the Cowboys in the 90s, and Steve Young, who won a pair and is in the Hall of Fame as well. That group from the 92 conference championship matchup, or the 93 group, Montana and Kelly, Steve Young, and Troy Aikman again. Which of those three groups, the two I just read you along with this year's Roethlisberger, Brady matchup, Ryan and Aaron Rodgers, which of those is the most star-studded, most decorated, most incredibly successful, whatever it is that you want to call it, quarterback foursome in conference championship game history? Which one do you lean to?
I lean towards the one right now.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you have some of the names in the 92 and 93, and as you're going over some of those names, I'm clicking on various years on some of these and looking for the four matchups, and there's always one at least that knocks the whole thing off. A perfect example, one that I just clicked on as you tossed it to me just now, 75. So you got Steelers over the Cowboys. So that's Bradshaw and oh goodness, why am
Staubach.
I? Thank you, Staubach. And also they had the Raiders in one of the championship games. So that's Stabler, but then the L.A. Rams are the fourth team.
Oh, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing.
I'm going through who was in the Final Four, and with the exception of the 3 years you named, this year, 92, 93, there's always one quarterback amongst the four that would throw the whole thing off, no matter where I'm going. So I kind of lean a little bit towards this year, but it's not by much. Those 92 and 93 years that you pointed out, those are pretty awesome.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if I'm looking at it the same way you are, I could very easily say that we're one quarterback away here too, and that's Matt Ryan, because his rings are naked. I mean, his fingers are naked.
Yep.
No rings. The other guys all have them. And to me, I got to tell you, I think it's a no-brainer that it's the 92 group. I picked the 92 group over the 93 group that we just ran down simply because the 93 group contains Joe Montana as a chief.
Yeah.
And while he was good and obviously, you know, made it to that AFC championship game, that wasn't the Joe Montana of the, Niners golden years. So,
which is part of probably the reason I don't have 93, for example, is my favorite either.
Right.
I'd rather have a Niners. But Montana I have 92. We're having this discussion.
But I have 92 because none of the rest of them, I don't believe, are all. Oh, no, they are. 93 is also a Hall of Famer. So I guess I'm just picking between 92 and 93.
Yeah.
Four Hall of Famers: Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, Troy Aikman, and Steve Young were just the preeminent guys at their positions, at the position quarterback position. I mean, in their eras, they were just the best. And you had all four of them matching up against one another. And Jim Kelly won against Dan Marino, and who won in 92? That would have been Aikman over Steve Young and the Niners.
Yep.
And then, of course, the Cowboys went on to beat the Bills. I mean, honestly, the Matt Ryan thing would be holding me back here. And it's not fair because we're judging the history of the 92 group against the potential of this current group, and we're projecting Hall of Famers. We can definitely project three of them. I'm not ready to project Matt Ryan as a Hall of Famer yet until he has another two or three years like this
right.
year, or until he cashes in a championship and gets a ring on one of those naked fingers. So to me, this might be and probably is about the second most dynamic, decorated, outstanding, highly ranked foursome of quarterbacks in a championship weekend, maybe, that we have ever seen.
It's up there. It's up there. You know, as I'm still scanning around in other years that to me still definitely fall short. Here's one that where, okay, I see some of the names, but I see why you'd keep them short. 1988, you had Montana, with the Niners. They of course won the Super Bowl against Boomer Esiason's Bengals, who beat Jim Kelly's Bills, and then you have McMahon for the Bears.
Yeah, so, see, I mean that was not even close.
One or two guys. That
That's
kinda,
not even close because
exactly,
McMahon's not a Hall of Famer.
Exactly.
And Esiason's not a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Neither one of them.
Exactly.
They were both good. They're both very good. Esiason probably a little better. McMahon a little more flamboyant.
Yeah.
But no, that's not a quarterback foursome, I think, as good as
exactly. There, no matter what year you click on, essentially, except for maybe this year, 92, 93, there's one, maybe two that throws the whole thing off.
Which is what makes this such a fascinating conversation. And then another conversation will be, depending on how things go this Sunday in the championship games, if we end up with the Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers Super Bowl matchup, will that be the greatest Super Bowl head-to-head quarterback matchup ever? Now you've got to go back to Bradshaw versus Staubach, both Hall of Famers.
Right.
Now you've got to go back to Elway versus Montana.
Even though that was 55-10.
Now, but it's not about the outcome.
It's about the
matchup of quarterbacks going in. Now you got to go back to Marino Montana in 84. Now you got to go back to Young 92. Kelly. I mean, we're talking about some crazy, crazy matchups there, but it's fun, and that's why we're going to continue doing this. All right. By the way, does anybody else think it's time for LeBron James to shave off his James Harden mini beard? Stop. You look stupid. Sorry, I just saw a picture of him. I had to say that. We're going to talk more NFL playoff, AFC and NFC championship game conversation coming up with Adam Stites, NFL contributor with SB Nation, coming up right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed. Thanks so much for being a part of this Friday afternoon. It's a free-for-all Friday, but we are kind of locked in on the AFC-NFC Championship games coming up on Sunday. The National Football Conference boys go first at about 3, what are they listed at, Jim? 3:20, something like that, kickoff?
Yeah, and our coverage, by the way, here on The Ticket will begin at about 2.
It's
Curtis, our friends at Westwood One.
And then the AFC boys, the Steelers at the Patriots around 6:40 is when you'll have that on Sunday right here as well as everywhere. By the way, speaking of great football coverage, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket has complete coverage of National Signing Day coming up on Wednesday, February 1st. We'll have reports from Ohio State, Michigan, Toledo, Bowling Green, and more. It's driven by Sauter's Food Centers in Sylvania and Waterville. And, of course, Toledo sports leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So we're looking forward to signing day. All right, let's get back into the mix now with respect to the NFL, NFC, I should say, and AFC championship games. Joining us to break it down, Adam Stites, NFL contributor for the good people over at SBNation.com. Hey, Adam, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I am outstanding. Looking forward to two really, really great games. I got to tell you, there were a lot of different possibilities there. Of course, the Cowboys had an outstanding season. The Chiefs were so consistently good for really about two-thirds of the season. And these championship games could have come up a little bit differently, but I don't know that they could have come up any better than the matchups that we got. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you like quarterback play, I think you got four, maybe the top five or six guys in the entire NFL at quarterback still in this. So, you know, I like watching good quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan. That should be definitely fun. So that's what I'm looking forward to most.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I know you weren't listening to our last segment before you came on, but what we were talking about is not just are they four of maybe the top six in the NFL right now, and I think you're right about that, by the way. I think we might be talking about the best foursome to ever compete in championship weekend in the two conference championship games. ESPN was kicking this around a little bit on their website, and they came up with a couple of other prospects. In 1992, Jim Kelly, Hall of Famer, took on Dan Marino, Hall of Famer, in the AFC game. Troy Aikman, Hall of Famer, took on Steve Young, Hall of Famer, with the Cowboys and Niners in the NFC championship game. And 1 year later, 93, Joe Montana, then with the Chiefs, took on Jim Kelly again in the AFC Championship game. Steve Young with Montana's Niners Hall of Famer took on Aikman again with the Cowboys. So I think Cushlin and I were just kicking this around a little bit, Adam. And between, really, if you look at all of the other potential foursomes in championship weekend, I think maybe this one that we're going to see on Sunday doesn't take a backseat to any, with maybe the exception of those two that we just named. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. The AFC has always had Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, kind of, it was always one of those three got to the Super Bowl the last probably 12 or 13 years. But this is only the second time we've ever seen Roethlisberger and Brady against each other, and the first time was Ben's rookie year. So, yeah, usually there's always these guys in the mix, but you don't ever actually see all four of them, or I shouldn't say four of them, but four top elite guys in the very end like this. Usually somebody sneaks through. You know, Brock Osweiler was in the divisional round, so we were close to having somebody that doesn't look like they belong, but we got four, and that, like you said, that's super rare. Something you don't see once every maybe 20 years or so.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think three of these guys are lock Hall of Famers. Roethlisberger with his two championships and tremendous statistics. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers considered already maybe one of the five best all time, but just the one ring to show for it, and Brady speaks for himself. Ryan's got some work to do. He's going to have to win one of these. He's going to get himself a ring, I think, to lock up a Hall of Fame bid, and he's going to have maybe a couple more years like his potential MVP year this year to really get into that class. But for today, he is certainly one of the top and maybe the best quarterback in the group as far as the season he has had in 2016. All right, let's get to the breakdown of the games now. Let's start in the order that they're going to be played. Adam Stites of SB Nation, and that is, of course, the Packers and the Falcons at the Georgia Dome is a very interesting one to me because Aaron Rodgers is on such an ungodly hot streak, but he's walking into a place where Matt Ryan and his his cache of toys, if you will, to play with, they are just so comfortable at home. They don't have to worry about the elements they would have to deal with if they were at Lambeau. This just plays right into Atlanta's wheelhouse. But you got, like I said, the hottest of the hot and Rodgers coming in. How do you see it?
Yeah, for as good as Matt Ryan's season has been, you still picking against Aaron Rodgers is really tough just because he's been on such a tear. But when you really look at the Packers, the injuries have really piled up. They had some big issues with cornerback early in the year, and it's still kind of a problem. They don't have a lot of depth there.
Yeah.
And now they have receiver issues, and it's just a bad combo against a young Falcons defense that isn't great but can take advantage if they have the right matchups, and then a Falcons offense that's just loaded all the way throughout. If you don't have the cornerbacks to slow them down, I think it could be a rough day for the Packers defense.
Yeah, I really do too, and Jim and I are going to pick our winners here at the end of the show, but you make a very good point. The one factor here, as great as Rodgers has been, and it's hard to pick against him, but the one factor really is the health, not only of the cornerbacks of the Packers, as you point out, that Ryan is going to be playing against and throwing against, but obviously Rodgers' own receivers and Jordy Nelson. Do you know exactly what his status is? He made a statement, of some kind yesterday, I think it was, that if he's not on the field at 100%, he doesn't want to be in the field at all?
Yeah, McCarthy's been he's kept it quiet. He said that Nelson, Davante Adams, Geronimo Allison, all those guys are going to be game time decisions. And that's, how much I actually believe that, I don't know. Usually they have a pretty good idea of what they think the guys are going to do, but they'll keep it a game time decision so that nobody else really knows. Jordy Nelson's also sick today right now. He didn't practice because, he's got some sort of bug that they didn't want him around the other players. So I would lean towards him being out. A rib injury already kept him out 1 week. I don't think he's going to be good to go, but I wouldn't be surprised if Adams and or Allison are both able to go.
We're talking to Adam Stites of SBNation.com, an NFL contributor. Just real quick, because I know Jim's got a question for you, but and I know you're not a defensive coordinator by trade, but you are an NFL writer, so maybe you have some thoughts on this. If you looked at your personnel with Atlanta and you said, okay, Aaron Rodgers is playing what some are calling the best football any quarterback has ever played for a prolonged period of time, and in this case, 9 games, and that's pretty heady stuff there to say ever. If you're the defense coordinator of the Falcons, what kind of game plan are you instituting? What are you doing? Are you loading up the rush and just going to try to get to him and bring extra guys, running the risk that maybe with the second-tier receivers he's got to play with because of injuries, that maybe they won't make their hot reads, maybe they can't adjust quickly enough to his quick adjustment to the blitz? Or are you saying, you know what, I got to get a rush with my front four because I got to drop all seven guys back in coverage against him? How do you handle it if you're the defensive coordinator for the Falcons?
Well, I don't know if there's a right answer. There's never really been a solution for Aaron Rodgers. Personally, I think your best bet is probably dropping more guys into coverage. He evades the rush about as well as anybody. He'll make something happen. So I think your best bet is just trying to hold him in the pocket and then hope that your defensive back can win against the reverse. Again, there's plenty of examples of him just also sitting back there and picking teams apart. So I don't know that there's a right answer, but personally, I drop him into coverage and I don't send extra rushers because he gets around those guys.
Right, gotcha. Adam Seitz is our guest from SB Nation. Kush, go ahead.
And, you know, one thing we've been thinking about when it comes to this matchup, and I personally have been thinking about for this whole week leading up to it, Adam, is that it probably will be a shootout. And part of the reason for that is, injuries aside, Green Bay comes in 21st in points allowed and Atlanta 27th. In other words, their defenses give up points.
Yeah, absolutely. And Atlanta's defense has some young promising players, Deion Jones and Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley, and their defense is kind of built around big moments. Those guys will make big plays, but they lose the part slowly and too. So, yeah, the Falcons defense isn't, even if the Packers are down to
hey Adam, listen, we're losing you. We're cutting out about every fourth word right now. We're gonna hang up. Let's hang up, and I'm gonna put you on hold real quick here, and Jim will reconnect with you. We gotta try another connection here because we're losing every about fourth word, and I don't think that's helping anybody. But the response is a good one, obviously, and both these defenses do give up points. And the question is, you know, and I already saw one headline today that said whoever has the ball last may win. This might be just one of those things. We saw it last week. Dak Prescott got the game-tying field goal, but he got it with 35 seconds left. And that was enough time for Aaron Rodgers to do Aaron Rodgers-type stuff and to make that throw to Cook down on the sideline and to set up the 51-yarder from Mason Crosby to win the thing. It may be the same thing. If you're Aaron Rodgers and you're on your way down the field for what could be a game-winning or a game-tying score, you've literally got to milk that clock down to the last, I don't know, 10, 9, 8, 7 seconds. Because if you give, you know, Matt Ryan, with what he's done this year, 20 seconds or more, it might be too many. If you're Matt Ryan and you give Aaron Rodgers, as you just saw, 20 or 30 seconds left, it just may very well be whoever has, excuse me, the ball last is going to score the game winner or drive down and get the game winner. I have no doubt about that. Let's bring him back in again. Adam Seitz is with us. We had a little phone trouble with him there, some static. We'll see if this one works any better. Adam, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks. Sorry about that. We just wanted to make sure that our listeners could hear what you're saying. Just to wrap up the NFC side, we're just kind of literally saying it may be just one of those whoever has the ball last situations. Just don't leave the other guy 30 seconds or more, and maybe you get this thing done. Because that was Dak Prescott's mistake. He left Aaron Rodgers 35 seconds after he kicked that game-tying field goal, or he drove the Cowboys down to that last week. So last possession could very well be moving to the Super Bowl. But let's go to the AFC side now. The Patriots have had their way with the Steelers. They have had their way with the Steelers in the postseason as well. But they have not faced the Steelers in the postseason with all three guys at the peak of their powers and in their prime. Talking about the Killer Bees, Ben, Brown, and Bell. And Le'Veon Bell has just been such a monster in this postseason thus far. He is a difference maker. He is a game changer. But can there be enough game-changing plays in him to win at Foxborough, a place in January that just, you know, people go in and they die. That's where NFL championship dreams go to die, if you got to go to Foxborough in January.
Yeah, I think the way to beat the Patriots has always been pressure Brady, get some turnover luck, and then control time of possession. And that's where Le'Veon Bell comes in big, is that if they're going to slow down Brady, the best way to do it is to just not give Brady the ball. And if you can give a healthy dose of Le'Veon Bell 4 or 5 yards at a time, that's probably the best way to attack them offensively and really just grind out a long game and not try to go strike for strike with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's the traditional way. I suppose, is if you have a strong running game, you use that to keep the other team's quarterback off the field and limit their opportunities to come down and make strikes and beat you. And certainly Bell would be, you know, the preeminent guy to do that. I mean, he's the best running back left in the playoffs. He may have been the best running back going into the playoffs, with apologies to Ezekiel Elliott, who had a remarkable rookie year. But what Bell has done as far as yards from scrimmage this year is all-time stuff. You know, it's among the all-time greats. What do you make, though, of the way Brady played and the Patriots offense played while winning the game handily against the Texans and covering a 16-point spread? He himself did not have a great game. They got after him. Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus, they put some pressure on him and made him a little uncomfortable. Do you think that there's something that the Steelers may have seen in that film that they can take advantage of? And maybe it's not just about running Bell to stop Brady, but they have their own methods of stopping Brady.
Yeah, absolutely. The Patriots don't lose in the playoffs much, but when they do, it's usually been defense first. It's been the Jets caught them a couple times, the Ravens caught them, the Broncos got them last year. It's always been those kind of teams that have been defensive-minded, and that's what the Texans brought last week. They brought a lot of pressure. They got the turnovers. You know, Tom Brady threw two interceptions after throwing two interceptions the entire regular season. So I don't know that the Steelers have that defense. The Texans had the number one defense in the NFL in yards allowed per game. The Steelers don't have that formula. They've got some bright spots. They've got some young corners. They got, you know, Bud Dupree and James Harrison have been pretty solid this year, but they don't have the depth that the Texans do. And so I think they're just going to have to get lucky with some turnovers. But that's tough. That's a tough ask. If the Patriots look like they did last week, then maybe they have a shot at slowing them down. But it's a lot to ask for.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because they don't make many mistakes, obviously, in the postseason, do the Patriots. They don't turn the ball over a lot. You do have to force them. But to that point, you know, the Steelers might not have the depth on defense that the Texans do or did. But the way they have played in the last 6-7 weeks of the regular season and now through a couple of playoff games is a very, very different defense than what they were at the beginning of the season, including when they played the Patriots before. And the other X factor there is, you know, because they've gotten better. First of all, some of their young guys like Artie Burns in the secondary are much better than they were at the start of the season. And Dupree coming back and really only starting up the last 4 or 5 weeks has been terrific, an incredible pass rushing presence for them. But then the other add-on to that, as far as the Patriots go, is Rob Gronkowski played a huge role in their earlier season win over the Steelers, in which Landry Jones played for Ben Roethlisberger. So if you say minus Gronkowski, plus Roethlisberger over Jones, and a much better defense that they had at the same time, you could be in for a potentially a very different result this time around.
Yeah, and I think you kind of got to throw out that last result, because like you said, when it's Landry Jones with Gronkowski, there's so much different now that it's hard to even draw from that last one. However, you know, in Tom Brady's career, he's faced a Mike Tomlin-led Steelers 6 times, and he's thrown 19 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he's just absolutely shredded the Steelers basically every time he's ever seen them.
Yes, he has.
So, it's, you can throw out this result, but historically, he really has never had an issue with anything the Steelers have thrown at them.
We started our week off with this after we saw what matchup we got here for the AFC Championship game. Tom Brady versus Mike Tomlin defenses. In 6 games, he's 5-1, 71.2% completion, 315 yards a game, 19 touchdowns, not a single interception. That's 118 rating at 33.3 points per game. So you're absolutely right. Mike Tomlin's defenses have not been able to solve Tom Brady yet. The question is again, whether they saw anything that Houston did last week that may help them be able to do it this time. I just don't know. Can you give us a prediction on both games? Give us a score.
I'll go Atlanta over Green Bay 31-28, and then I'll go New England over Pittsburgh 27-17.
All right, there you have it. Adam Stites making the call for us from SB Nation. Adam, thanks for the analysis and the fun conversation. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got it. Thanks so much for getting back with us, too. Sorry about the phone problem that we had there. All right, so there's Adam Stites joining us with his thoughts on it. What we're going to do is this. Top of the hour coming up here. We're going to get a sports center for you. On the flip side of that, we're going to come back and get away from the NFL, because I don't know about you, but I have some very serious thoughts that I would like to discuss on yesterday's NBA announced all-star starters. Two Cleveland Cavaliers are going to start, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, obviously. A couple of Golden State Warriors are going to start as well. But there are a couple of very notable omissions, including one of the leading scorers in the NBA who did not get one of the starting nods in the East. I'll tell you who that is. And the most outrageous stat-stuffing machine that the league has seen in 40 or 50 years did not get a starting nod in the Western Conference. You have Eastern Conference snub and a Western Conference snub, at least among the starters, that I think really need to be addressed. I'm going to talk about that with you and get your thoughts as well as we continue. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. You can send your Twitter thoughts to us at Sports Radio 1065, your Facebook comments at 1065, The Ticket on Facebook, and we'll get you up and on the radio coming up next right here on The Ticket.
These two are definitely really close in the MVP voting. Not really mad at that one. You know, the fans had Harden, but slight edge. Westbrook is having a great year. He's definitely going to make the team. I'm not mad at this list. This one was okay.
These guys are having phenomenal years. No disrespect to them, but then it would be a disrespect to the two-time All-NBA MVP if you don't start them. So I could see how the fans and everyone could say it's equal, and then Steph wins out because of popularity.
100% disagree with both you two. Russell Westbrook should be starting. That's no disrespect to Steph Curry. He's a great player. He's on a really good team. But what Russell Westbrook is doing, he deserves to be starting, plain and simple.
You've got to be able to understand that when you go on the road, you got a lot of elements to face. Hostile environment, the crowd, the weather, you just never know. We cherish that opportunity to go on the road, especially in the awesome environments like Gillette Stadium, with passionate fans that are going to be excited. And it's just something that you know you're going to have to deal with if you don't get the one or two seed.
There's always something going on. So I think it's important for us to focus on what our job is, and that's to go out and play well. You know, our job is show up and try to do a great job when we get the chance. And that's that's the way it's been all year for us. So many great players that I stepped in the huddle with that, you know, are on defense, you know, have really helped us achieve, you know, all the success that we've had. It's a lot of people working hard, going in the right direction. I've been very blessed. We have to play our best game of the year. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, we got to all do whatever it takes to be at our best for those 3 hours on Sunday night.
You know, I don't specifically have to go out on the field and defend Aaron, which is a good thing for us, but it's fun. I've played against him a number of times, and I've gotten to know him throughout the years, and I respect him so much because he's such a great competitor. Regardless of the situation, he goes out there and he competes hard and plays really well week in and week out. You know, once we get into it, it's about, you know, trying to do the best we can against their defense, you know, focusing on how well we can play. And at the end of the day, that's where my focus will be at on Sunday.
I've been playing a little bit better and got some guys healthy, and everybody's been kind of raising their level of play. We've been more efficient, and, you know, we had a good year on third down. We had a good year in the red zone. We're on a streak right now in our red zone conversions. But it's just a matter of being more efficient, everybody, myself included. Yeah, they've been playing great on offense, but we just focus on the defense and how to be efficient against those guys. We scored points on them last time, especially in the first half. They kind of tightened up in the second half and sacked us a few times on third down. We got to do a better job, but, you know, playing a 60-minute game against them, because obviously Matt's been pretty hot.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is, as we roll onward. Thanks much for being a part of it. Don't you love the understatement of Aaron Rodgers there?
Yes.
you know, it's funny because I said at the top of the show, Jim, when you played that montage, and you just heard, FYI, if you just turned on the radio, first of all, welcome for the second hour of the Extravaganza. You just heard Shaq, Kenny Smith, and Barkley, the TNT boys, about the NBA All-Star guys, which we're going to talk about in a moment. The All-Star starters, anyway, that have been announced by the league for the Eastern and Western Conferences, respectively. And then you heard Big Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, and then Aaron Rodgers at the end. Jim, at the top of the show when you played that, I threw the point out that Rodgers said he described as Matt Ryan as a little bit hot. Like, you kidding me? Dude's just been straight on fire. But I loved his own understatement of his own performance
right.
The second time around when he said, yeah, well, I've been playing a little bit better. I've been playing a little bit better. He has been playing some of the greatest quarterbacking the league has ever seen for a prolonged period of time. And in this case, that prolonged period is over 9 straight games since he said, we're going to run the table. And he's doing everything humanly possible to make that happen. Just simply a remarkable run for Aaron Rodgers. Did you do for him in those nine games what you did for Brady and Manning when we were kind of doing the comparison? You gave me the nine-game completion percentage, nine-game average yards per game, total touchdowns and interceptions in those nine games for the other two guys, and their quarterback rating. Do you have that for these guys, or I'm sorry, for Rodgers in these nine as well?
Let's see. No, I didn't have it yet, but that's also going to include the playoffs.
Which changes things a little bit, of course, but you know what? So what? I mean, he hasn't really had a drop-off in the playoffs, so let's just kind of see what happens. You don't have to do it right now, but I'm just kind of curious maybe before we're done. And I'd still like to see one other guy. Oh, you know what? I think I just thought of somebody else, Jim. We were talking about whether or not anybody else has ever played nine straight games as dominant at the quarterback position as Aaron Rodgers has in these nine. And we went through Manning, nine-game stretch in his 2013 year in which he threw for 5,500 yards or 5,400 yards and 55 touchdown passes. We did Tom Brady in the 16-0 season of 2007, in which he threw 50 touchdown passes. We had a nine-game stretch there that was sick. And then I said maybe Dan Fouts from the Air Coryell years. How could I skip over Drew Brees? Drew Brees has to have had in some of these years. He's making 5,000 yards a season look just routine. I mean, truly, Drew Brees has to have had a nine-game run that might have been comparable, if not superior, to the one that Aaron Rodgers is on right now. He has to have. And again, I don't have it all in front of me. I'd have to go look and, you know, pick out one of those magical years in which he threw for over 5,000 yards and look for a nine-game run. But I feel like it could be. Here's Drew Brees. Here's Drew Brees passing totals. Jim, are you listening to this?
Yeah.
You got to hear this. Drew Brees passing totals from 2006 to the present. That's a decade if you're counting at home. 4,400 yards. This is in 2006, all with the Saints, obviously. He was with the Chargers for the first 5 years of his career. But 4,418, 4,423, 5,069. That broke the record of Marino. 4,388, 4,620, 5,476, 5,177, 5,162. Remember, prior to this run of his, Marino had been the only 5,000-yard passer in a single season in history. That record in 1984 of 5,084 yards stood for like 30 years. And Brees is just going by routinely, 5,177, 5,162, mm-hmm. 4,952, 4,870, and then this year, 5,208 once again.
Well, in terms of an 8 or 9 game stretch, I went back to the year, this would be 2011, when he had 5,400 yards. The Saints went 13-3, but they lost the NFC Championship game that year. The final 8 regular season games, because the way that the little site, I'm on Pro Football References, which is great because we live in the digital age, so I don't have to consult my big, giant encyclopedia books, which I have right at home, by the way. I'm probably one of the few still left that has those. But in his final 8 games...
Save it, because when ISIS hits our power grid and knocks us all offline... And
we're using lanterns and stats from exactly
when we're using lanterns and candles again and fire for warmth, you'll have your stat book. So
darn right. So this was a 13-3 season for the Saints. And actually, check that. Despite being 13-3, that game they lost to the Niners I mentioned in the playoffs, that was actually the divisional round, because I'm looking, they played the Lions, and I know for a fact that was a wild card game because, you know, that's the Lions in right the current age. But in the final 8 regular season games of that year, Drew Brees, 71.9% completion, 27 touchdowns, 4 picks, the rating of 121.6. And
so that's 10 shy of the rating from Brady in his 9-game run during the 07 season, which was 131.
Right. I started that because the Week 8 game for the Saints that year, they lost at the Rams, and that was the last time they lost until that divisional game against the Niners. And I picked that year because, you know, the next year he had 5,000-some-odd yards again, but the Saints only went 7-9.
Aha. What about 2009 with Brees?
2009?
Yeah, it was in 15 games, 13, he didn't play one.
Right.
13-2 that year, 43-88 in yards, 70.6 completion percentage, 34 touchdowns, 11 picks. Any nine-game stretches there that look like they could be it?
Well, let's see. The Saints that particular year, they actually lost the last two games Breeze started. So I will take the 13 in a row before that, that all of which were W's for Drew Breeze and the Saints in 09. And
can you pull the averages of those games like we just did for the others?
I will have to add up the yards on my little calculator, but the rest of the numbers are in this 13-game stretch. So this is from September 13th in 09 through December 13th. So literally exactly 3 months. 69.9% completion, 3,832 yards, 32 touchdowns, did have 10 picks, the rating 112.3.
That's in 13 games, though. If you drop off some at either end, is there a 9-game run, though, that might jack that up higher?
Well,
not that 112 is something you should have to...
Well, let's put it this
apologize
way.
Apologize for, but
right. Well, for that, I'd want to definitely start with the opener, which was a 45-27 win against the Lions, where Breeze threw six touchdowns and one pick that day. So I'm going to start.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid day. That's a pretty solid day. And look, you know what? We don't have to do this right now because we don't have time for it. But I want to do this, you know, even if we don't bring it up, I'd like to do it before, but it doesn't matter because here's the story. If Aaron Rodgers wins, if the Packers win, and you and I will make our picks at the end of the show,
right,
okay?
Right.
If Aaron Rodgers and the Packers win, and it's kind of hard to pick against them, this conversation will be ongoing through Super Bowl week.
We'll have exactly, and then we'll have 2 weeks for that, of course.
Exactly, because then we'll talk about a 10-game stretch because it will, if he wins, if they win, he's going to have to play Rodgers-like. He's going to have to have another monster game, right? So that means this conversation will be, has anybody ever played for 10 straight weeks the type of football that from the quarterback position that Rodgers is playing? And we'll go back and look at the Brady, the Breeze, the Manning, the Fouts, you know, even the Montana year. We really, you know, he never had quite as many sparkling stats, but I guarantee he's had 9 games of dominance, you know, in his championship runs that would rival what Rodgers is doing. At a time in which the passing game was still prolific, but not what it is today. I mean, today's offenses are so much different than even the great pass offenses of the 80s and 90s. It's just a different type of animal now, and maybe others will pair in comparison to Rodgers because of that. But I would still like to look. All right, but in the meantime, I want to do what I said and at least get a few comments in and thoughts on the NBA and the All-Star starters that were announced yesterday because quite frankly, there's something wrong. Something is amiss. And I'm not going to diss anybody when I say something is amiss in the way this has gone on because it's not their faults. I do like, by the way, let me say this right off the rip. I like the fact that this is not just fan voting.
Right.
This is a combination, a three-way deal, right, where the fans combined with media, you know, kind of like beat writers who cover the teams on a regular basis, not just, you know, anybody. And players get a vote as well. And they collectively decided that the starting backcourt for the Western Conference is going to be Steph Curry and James Harden. And Russell Westbrook, who's averaging a triple-double in this calendar season thus far, he's averaging 30.6 points per game, 10.4 assists, and 10.6 rebounds, which is just flat-out stupid, is not a starter. In the Western Conference, the Western Conference starters announced were Harden, Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and Kawhi Leonard. And while I have no problem with any of those guys who did get named, I do have a problem with the fact that Russell Westbrook did not.
Yeah.
And thus, I have to replace somebody on that Western Conference starting All-Star team in order to make this right.
Now, as we go on, let me point out for you, Bob, and for our listeners who are maybe still adjusting to this, to how they did the All-Star voting, a couple of random quick points just to keep in your head when thinking about all this. The way they broke it down, 50% goes to the fan vote, which is, you know, the old school way of doing it,
right.
25% then to the player vote, and 25% to the media vote, and if there's a tie, we'll get to that in a second, the fan vote is the tiebreaker.
Okay, and that to me is a little bit of the problem. Okay? And the reason why it's the problem is because the fan vote is going to be very heavily skewed toward the teams that are packing their arenas, and fans vote is kind of like baseball.
Basically, yeah.
And that's not to say, that's unfair because I get it. I get why they want to do it. This is a fan game anyway. The game doesn't count. It's an exhibition game. So let's let the fans see what they want to see. But Golden State, of course, is sold out at Oracle constantly. The Bay Area is a huge market. The Warriors are the hottest thing in town. And obviously, you know, going to two straight finals, they have tons of support. And certainly Curry and Durant are going to get that support. But that doesn't mean it's right. Now, here's another little tidbit just to point out for those who don't know. They no longer do two guards, two forwards, and a center. They started this about 4, 5, 6 years ago. I don't know exactly how long, Jim. But they switched it to front court players.
Of which there's three.
And back court players.
And that's the other two.
So, in other words, that means you don't have to have a center. Even though in this particular case, you have an all-star caliber center, a guy certainly one of the best players in the NBA in DeMarcus Cousins, and maybe another one in DeAndre Jordan,
right.
You don't have to pick a center. Now, right. Some of them don't like that. Jordan, by the way, has been very outspoken, really, really finds it insulting that they don't think that the powers that be don't think you have to have an all-star center anymore on an all-star team, that centers are just like, you know, passe. They're not important. And I get his point, but it is true. It's a different game. You know, sometimes you play the game the way the game is played now. You have five guard-type players on the court anyway. And the center might be a 6'10", 6'11 guy who's a three-point specialist. It's just the way the game has become. So there's three front-court players, no matter what position, small forward, power forward, or center, that are on the all-star starting team. And then, of course, the two in the backcourt. So, to me, you can't touch Leonard or Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant in the Western Conference because they're front court players. If you want to insert Russell Westbrook into the starting lineup, and I do, it's got to be for James Harden or Steph Curry, which means you then have to ask yourself who's having the best seasons between James Harden, Steph Curry, and what Russell Westbrook. And for me, Russell Westbrook and James Harden are having by far the two best seasons in the National Basketball Association.
With you 100% on that.
I'm sorry?
With you 100% on that.
Even better than LeBron James, who, by the way, has been spectacular. At 25.3 points, 8.3 assists, and 7.8 rebounds for the best team in the East.
I'm not even thinking about the East. Just thinking of Curry, Harden, Westbrook. I'm with how the media and the players went. Westbrook, Harden, Curry, Westbrook. In that order.
Exactly. James Harden is at 28.9. What? Yeah, 28.9, 11.6 assists, meaning it's not just all ball hogging, the way James Harden has been in the past, and 8.3 rebounds. James Harden is having an absolute monster season, and probably at this point in time is the second leading scorer in the league, and also the leading assist man. James Harden is probably your MVP right now, unless it's Westbrook. With his 30.6, 10.4, and 10.6, Westbrook is leading the league in scoring. Again, no problem with Anthony Davis, 28.8. He's third in the league in scoring. Just having a monster year, rebounding as well. No problem with Kawhi Leonard because of all-around things. Although, again, if I had my way, if I had my druthers and I didn't have to be resort to positions, if I'm going to replace Russell Westbrook in the lineup with somebody, it would be Leonard probably even over Curry.
Right.
But be that as it may, it's got to be the backcourt guys, and it's got to be Curry. Steph Curry, for all of his greatness, is not having as great a year as Harden or Westbrook. And the fact of the matter is, and this is not his fault, but he doesn't have to because of the presence of Durant and obviously the continuing growth and evolution of Klay Thompson as an all-star. And he is an all-star.
And this
but
is
Curry
those...
hasn't had to carry a team the way Westbrook has carried a team. Curry has not had to put up the type of monster numbers all the way around. If he's having an off night, in fact, they could still win by double digits. If Russell Westbrook has an off night in Oklahoma City, they lose by double digits.
Yep.
No matter what. His burden is that much heavier, and the way he's carrying it has got to put him as a starter in this game.
And I mentioned the tiebreaker thing earlier. This is example one of when that came into place, when they took all the votes from all the various different sides and then did a little calculation to weigh them. Actually, Westbrook, Harden, and Curry all finished tied. So they went. So it goes the tiebreaker
fan vote,
which went Curry 1, Harden 2, Westbrook 3.
Right, there you go. How does Russell Westbrook feel about being snubbed as an all-star starter? Well, here's his reaction.
Just move off. It is what it is. It's nature of the business, the game. Just play. I play for all-star. Nines, all-star bids. I play to win championships, and every night I compete at a high level. And, it'll work out. just continue to do what I'm doing and, you know, do play the game the right way and everything else will work out.
By the way, I would like to thank every NBA media director ever for making sure that the interview area during practice is in the gym where all of the guys are bouncing basketballs.
This is an OKC thing. Everybody seems to do that.
Yeah, you can't step into a hallway and put that backdrop there. You can't put that Thunder in the hallway or in a separate room or right off the gym, a little media room where you can actually have some quiet and not having the balls thumping the
microphones.
Forget
outside the room. Were they literally next to the hoop in the practice session?
It sure sounds like it. I mean,
because that was right there. My goodness.
The video that I took this audio from is just of Russell and the backdrop, the Thunder backdrop there, so I can't see it. But it does sound like it's right there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so that's the injustice of the NBA, Western Conference.
And speaking of the injustice, because I'm with you on this whole thing. The flip side I want to make sure that everybody's aware of, though, which is why I personally, after try number one of this new voting system for NBA All-Star starters, I'm still kind of wishy-washy on where I stand, because on the other hand, had we done it the old school way of just fan voting, the following three names would all be All-Star starters right now, and not a one of them deserves it. Dwayne Wade, Joel Embiid, and Zaza Pachulia.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding?
Yes, Zaza Pachulia, if it was just fan voting, would have been an all-star starter. He doesn't even deserve to make the team in general. So I'm 50-50. I'm a little outraged on Westbrook being left off the team by it. But at the same time, it kind of worked because non-deserving Zaza Pachulia will not be gracing the Western Conference starting lineup.
That is a very interesting point. And you know what? I'm with you. I agree wholeheartedly on that. I want to get to the other side real quick, though, to the other Eastern Conference stuff. And this one is going to be a little bit more controversial, perhaps, depending on who you root for and depending on how you feel about, you know, supporting your own guys and, you know, your homerism, if you will, whatever you want to call it. Because the All-Star starters in the Eastern Conference include two Cavaliers, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. And it also includes DeMar DeRozan of the Raptors, who is one of the leading scorers in the league, the Greek Freak, Giannis, and I don't even try to say his last name at this point anymore. Do you want to give it a shot?
Neither do I. I'm not even going to try.
And who is well-deserving, and Jimmy Butler of the Chicago Bulls. Now, the backcourt guys are DeRozan and Irving. The frontcourt guys would be the forwards, Giannis and Butler and who else? Oh, and LeBron.
And LeBron.
Isaiah Thomas is left off of this team.
That was also a tiebreaker, by the by.
Westbrook. Right. He tied with DeRozan. And to me, this is, again, one of those things where no disrespect to DeMar DeRozan. Certainly none intended whatsoever. He's had a monster year. But it has not been as good as the guy that has been carrying the Boston Celtics. And by the way, his response to the snub, very, very different than Russell Westbrook. I just played you Westbrook's bouncing basketballs, who said, I don't play for all-star berths, and that's a nice thing to say, but we know he does like particular individual awards. Isaiah Thomas says, I do. I'm going to use this as motivation, by the way. It's not the end of the world, he said, but I am going to use this as motivation.
I mean, I was disappointed, but...
Again, thank you to every media director ever in the NBA. Great job putting the microphones right next to the bouncing balls at practice.
I deserve it as well. And I did everything I can in my control to put me in position to be a starter, so I can't really worry about the things I can't control. It's not the end.
You'll have to take my word for it that he said that he's going to use this as motivation because I can't stand the bouncing basketballs anymore. But Isaiah Thomas, all 5'9" of him, in his fifth year out of Washington, Isaiah Thomas is averaging 28.7 points, assists, 2.7 rebounds, and is simply carrying the Boston Celtics to one of the top seeds in the East. He's just, one of the more challenging teams in the East. He is just an absolute joy to watch. The Celtics are third right now in the East, and they would be nowhere without him. He needs to be there. The question I asked in the Western Conference is the same one here. Whose place does he take? And the answer to that question might be, and that's why I said, depending on loyalties, Jim Cushlin, should he start over Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, that's kind of the boat in the debate I've been having in my head since these came out, because Kyrie Irving, as much as we love him, and we do.
And he's an all-star.
He would be an all-star reserve at worst, but if you're talking starters, even I'm inclined to maybe lean a little more towards Isaiah.
That's right. It's either going to be him or DeRozan over Kyrie or DeRozan, and
right.
DeRozan having a great year, too. Yep. I don't know, but I think Isaiah Thomas got the short end of this. I know we got a break here. Let's get out, because I want to come back and get to the NFL and make our picks in the NFC and AFC championship games. We'll do that next, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Onward we roll, and toward the 5 o'clock hour right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader, and as we are dead set up against championship weekend, of course, in the NFL with the AFC and NFC championship games. We talked about it a lot already today. We talked about it with our guest, and now it's time to make our picks. Remember, these picks are, of course, for recreational purposes only. I do not gamble and would never tell anybody to gamble on my advice. But having said that, I do have some strong opinions about these games, and I know, Jim Cushlin, you do as well. So let us start, good sir, with the NFC championship game between the Packers and the Falcons. This is going to be an absolute shootout, in my opinion. I don't think either quarterback is going to be shut down by either defense. The question is, who has the last laugh? What are you thinking about Green Bay at Atlanta?
Well, I do find it strange to start off that the Falcons, despite the fact that they're at home for this one because of the seeding and all that, they're a 5.5-point favorite. I totally agree with you, Bob, relating to the shootout aspect. Both defenses are okay, but both of these quarterbacks are awesome. Obviously, a lot of attention's been paid, understandably so, to the run that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have been on, but then we've gone over in this last month or so when the subject has been brought up, the ridiculous numbers that Matt Ryan has been putting up, a career year for him. I absolutely do expect the shootout, but at this stage of the game, I like the Packers right now. I mean, because just everything they've done and have been doing since they were at their low point earlier this year, the going out and saying we're going to run the table and then pulling it off until last week's, I believe, divisional game. No turnovers, basically, for Aaron Rodgers at all. That's just unheard of. And then you get, for me, the personal factor extra in this is I can't buy into the Atlanta Falcons. It doesn't seem to matter what year or what personnel they have. When they get to these type of precipices, they tend to not do well. And I know, you know, history really doesn't matter for this game on Sunday.
It might.
But it might. Yeah, good point. It might. But what I do know about the history in this regard is that the Falcons don't seem to rise to that next level when they get to this point, whereas the Packers have in the past and have again, obviously, this year, again, referencing the climbing out of the hole they dug themselves in. So despite the fact it's a 5.5-point Atlanta favorite, I like Aaron Rodgers at the end of the day to make just a few more plays than Matt Ryan. And so I like the Packers, but I think it's going to be under a touchdown. I think you're looking at a 5-6-point kind of game when it's all said and done.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it's a reasonable point that you make, and I think it's a reasonable pick. I mean, quite frankly, is it possible to pick against Aaron Rodgers right now? Every analyst that I hear on the national scale, including right here on ESPN Radio and the national shows on Mike and Mike and beyond, everybody's talking about this 9-game run that they have been on and that he has been on since saying we're going to run the table. I believe we are going to run the table. And after he said that, they took down the Eagles, the playoff-bound and division champion Texans. They took down the playoff-bound Seahawks. They took down the weak Bears. They took down the moderate Vikings. They took down the playoff-bound Lions. And then, of course, in the postseason, two of the best teams in the NFC, two teams that the Lions, as we know, had to face during the final three-game stretch, the Giants and the Cowboys, who had been the best team in the NFC and one of the two best in the NFL, really, all season long. So, and on that run, we all know Aaron Rodgers' statistics. You know, his season totals are ridiculous, 40 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. His post-game numbers are ridiculous. It's impossible to pick against Aaron Rodgers in this game. He's going into up and against an Atlanta team that, as you point out correctly, does not have a tradition of playoff success. They do not have, you know, anything that says, boy, when you get into the NFC playoffs, boy, the one thing you don't want to do is go to Atlanta. They don't have that. And no disrespect about the fans there or the Georgia Dome or anything else, but you know that at playoff time, when people talk about places you don't want to be, you don't want to go to Foxborough, and we'll talk about the second game in a few, obviously. You don't want to go to Foxborough in January. It's just, their record there in the playoffs is so well established and defined. It is just it's a nightmare for visiting teams. You know, you could say that, and people have said that in previous years with fully healthy defenses, especially, and Marshawn Lynch. You don't want to go to the Pacific Northwest in January. You don't want to go up there and face the 12th man. They have established that as a place where people go in and they don't come out. So that's the kind of thing, and maybe, to a lesser extent, even you could say if this game was at Lambeau, that's not a place most teams want to go play in January. The temperatures, the frost, the wind, and obviously the opponent make that a tough place to play. But nobody has ever said that about going to Atlanta in January. Boy, that's a tough place to win. Atlanta is laying 5.5 points here solely because they are the host team and because they are the higher seeded team. The Packers are undoubtedly the hotter team. Now, having said all of that, I'm picking the Falcons. I'm picking Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons for one reason and one reason only. Yeah, correction. Two reasons and two reasons only. And both of them are very important skill positions for the Green Bay Packers. The Packers' secondary is injured. It is banged up. And the weapons that Matt Ryan has to throw, not just Julio Jones, who of course is going to play, but he might not be 100% with his toe, not just him, but the weapons that Matt Ryan has to play with, and he has played with all season long, spreading the ball out around receivers and backs. I mean, it's like a kid in a toy store. That he has to throw at a not fully healthy and fully productive and efficient secondary for Green Bay says to me that Matt Ryan can not only match Aaron Rodgers score for score in this game, which I think he can. Remember, Rodgers, 40 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Yeah, Matt Ryan, 38 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers, 4,400 yards passing in the regular season. Yeah, Matt Ryan threw for 4,900, or if you're scoring at home, 500 more. So my
and don't forget the quarterback rating, the 117.1 for the season. That not only led the NFL, that was fifth best ever.
And not only did it lead the NFL, you're exactly right, it also was a good 5 points higher than the runner-up, which was Tom Brady.
Right.
So, I mean, he just ran away with the kind of season he had. So I think he can not only match scores with Aaron Rodgers in this game. The second reason is I think he's going to get one more than Rodgers is because of the Jordy Nelson and the Packer receiving core, which is more banged up than its secondary. They just don't have all of the weapons. They have done. He's done a wonderful job of getting great production from Cook and from Randall Cobb and other guys. But look, this is just not going to be as easy against a Falcons team that is as explosive. And you saw what they did to that
yep.
Seattle defense in the wild card game. What they did to Seattle was criminal. Not wild card, in the division game last week, was criminal. I mean, they carved through, and I know, again, they didn't have Earl Thomas, but that's still a solid defense. Maybe not a game-breaking defense, but Matt Ryan is going to put up points. Aaron Rodgers is going to put up points. At the end of it all, I think Ryan has more weapons this time around. They're playing better, and I think the Atlanta Falcons are going to the Super Bowl in a shootout. And I think they're going to score 37 points. And I think Aaron Rodgers is going to score 31 of them, and not even a Hail Mary at the end of the game is going to work this time around for the Green Bay Packers. I'm going 37-31, Hotlanta, going to the show in Houston.
Now, I can't really disagree with that, even though I'm still sticking with the Packers in my call by about 5 or 6 points or so. Let's call it somewhere in the 27-21 kind of range is what I'm looking at.
But either defense holds the other team under 30 points, I will be stunned, and you have them both doing it.
Yeah, So I guess I'm playing extra conservative on this one because I was just going to point out once again that we're talking about it's probably a shootout one way or another. Yeah, the stats would bear that out. Packers 21st in points allowed, Falcons 27th. And I agree with you in this one aspect, Bob. If the Falcons end up winning, it will at the end of the day, I think, be because You mentioned the Jordy Nelson and that receiving core a little bit banged up, more so than what the Falcons, even with Julio's foot thing right now. And then the Packers secondary, which is going to be the one that has to contain those receivers and try not to let Matt Ryan get those passing numbers way, way high. So I do agree with that. If the Falcons win, it's going to be because the Packers in those fronts specifically are banged up. But I'm one that's kind of like those national guys right now. He's done enough that I am not picking against Aaron Rodgers until further notice.
Yeah, and again, it's really hard for me to do so as well. If the circumstances weren't as I described them, I wouldn't either. All right, so there's the NFC Championship game, and that will indeed be the early one coming up on Sunday. The late game starting at about 6:40 is in one of those places, Jim, that I said you just don't want to hear that you have been scheduled to play. I mean, you'll play anywhere for a chance to go to the Super Bowl, but if you have your choice, you don't want to have to try to go to the Super Bowl through Foxborough, Massachusetts in January. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have made that place just a house of horrors for so many teams, including the Steelers in the past, but this is a different Steelers team. The Steelers have not had all three of their superstars since 2013 playing a Bill Belichick team, and that was Le'Veon Bell's rookie year when he was not anywhere near the dynamic force that he is now, and he was pretty darn good as a rookie. But Roethlisberger is healthy, Antonio Brown is healthy, and Le'Veon Bell is healthy. The question is do they have enough to overcome the home field advantage of the team that is 15-2 on this season, finishing the regular season 14-2 with the greatest coach and arguably the greatest quarterback ever to play, looking for yet a seventh Super Bowl appearance. Jim Cushlin, how do you break it down?
Well, part of the way I break it down is by starting with this. Tom Brady, all time, this is playoffs and regular season, 9-2 against the Steelers, 26 touchdowns against just three picks. Even though Big Ben himself has 13 all-time playoff wins, and that's sixth all-time. So I still like the Patriots. I mean, it's kind of amazing that, you know, when you break down the NFL in historical terms, there's been a team of a decade, right? There's a dynasty per decade. Browns in the 50s, Packers 60s, Steelers 70s, Niners 80s, and on and on. This Patriots dynasty, which until Tom Brady walks off the field for the last time, is now coming up on, we're in 2017 now. It's 15 years old. It's arguably the longest dynasty in NFL history. And until further notice, there's no end in sight, even though we've been saying for many, many weeks now that Pittsburgh is most likely, especially with those three guys that you're mentioning, is the Patriots' biggest obstacle in getting back to a Super Bowl. But they've just been continue to do things in such a manner that make you wonder at times, how do they do it? Because they keep filtering in guys in positions.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Every time.
What makes it so amazing that this, you know, quote unquote dynasty has lasted as long as it has. And I don't know if you can call it a dynasty because the players have changed. And they've won four championships in those 15 years compared to the Steelers dynasty, which was four in 6 years, compared
True.
To the Niners dynasty, which was four in a period of, what, 10 years?
Yep.
The Cowboys, even in the 90s, three in 10 years. I don't know if four in 15 constitutes the same kind of dynasty, but to the point where I will credit them, as you are trying to do, it's been two guys. It's been Brady and Belichick
yep.
because running backs have changed, receivers have changed, offensive linemen have come. They've been rookies, they've been veterans, and they've retired in the time that Brady has still been there. Defensive players, the same thing. I mean, I see a number 50 running around on defense for the Patriots. I'm thinking, is that Vrabel? Hell, Vrabel retired 6-7 years ago.
I know, right?
And he was part of those. So so many guys have come and gone. It is not a dynasty in that aspect, but to still be pushing for and in the mix for championships for the better part of 15 years is a testament to those two guys and the way they work together and how they can make everybody around them even better than they are. We're running a little short on time, Jim, here as we approach the top of the hour, so go ahead and make your pick on this game.
I'm going to go Patriots 24, Steelers 17.
And what about your thoughts on the Steelers and the flu factor?
Well, obviously, you know, issues come up sometimes, and that's going to be an obvious one to monitor as Sunday comes along and everything. I don't think at the end of the day it's going to be a huge factor, because I would have liked the Patriots either way.
Yeah, and that's fine, and I can't really necessarily dispute the pick of the Patriots. They're the home team. They're the favorite team. They have the best quarterback, the guy who's gotten it done against Mike Tomlin's defense as many times in the past. And Bill Belichick, when given an opportunity to prepare more than the other team, is almost unbeatable. And as you heard Mike Tomlin say on the Antonio Brown Facebook live stream video, Mike Tomlin complained that, you know, but, I mean, not in a complaining, whiny way, but saying that we spotted these blank blanks, you know, these a-holes, he said, a day and a half. Right. They played yesterday. We had to play late tonight. But you know what? It doesn't matter. We're still going to get after that. And while it's great that, you know, Tomlin is telling his guys that it doesn't matter, in reality it does matter because Bill Belichick has been that kind of a coach throughout his career. He over-prepares and he, you know, oftentimes, almost always, manages to find the right strategy, game plan, philosophy, play, matchup, or whatever it takes to exploit to get a win and go to what would be their seventh Super Bowl. Having said all that, I'm doing the same thing I did when I picked the NFC game. I'm laying out all the reasons why the Patriots should win, and I'm going to tell you I'm picking the Steelers. And I'm picking the Steelers for one reason and one reason only. Does this sound familiar? That triumvirate of superstars, that trio, those triplets, those three-headed monster, whatever you want to call the killer bees of Ben, Brown, and Bell, are going to overwhelm the Patriots. I think the Patriots think that the Steelers can't score enough points to beat them because of the very strange way that the last week's division win over the Chiefs turned out, where they ended up having six field goals and beating a team that scored two touchdowns, which has never happened in the history of football. 0-45 are teams that are outscored in touchdowns by two or more until last week. And I think the Patriots defense is going to be lulled into a bit of complacency, perhaps, saying that team might move the ball, but they can't score in the red zone, and they're going to think they're going to stop it there. I think last week was a fluke in that regard. I think he knows, he being Mike Tomlin and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, Ben Roethlisberger, they know the opportunities that they missed, and they know how to cash them in. Look, I don't think the Patriots' defense is any better than the Chiefs, and the Chiefs' defense was good, and the Chiefs' defense got gashed by the running game of Le'Veon Bell. They moved the ball from 20 to 20 all night long last week, and I believe they're going to move the ball like that this week, except they're going to cash in. The X factor will be the Steelers defense trying to stop Tom Brady, but Brady, as we know, did not even have a great game against the Houston defense, which is another very good one, last week, because they got after him and they put hits on him. You've seen Harrison find the fountain of youth. You've seen Bud Dupree. You've seen Timmons and Shazier on blitzes and so on and so forth. You have a very, very strong Steelers pass rush that did not exist in the earlier game when they played at the start of this season. So I think the combination of Bell and Brown and Ben, they're going to put up points that the Patriots are not expecting, and I think the Steelers defense is going to make life a little tougher for Tom Brady than he really thought it could be or should be at age 39. Steelers 27, Patriots 24.
I love how we've done no favors, by the way, Bob, to our degenerates out there. I have a Packers-Patriots Super Bowl, and you have a Falcons-Steelers. So we've
done no favors
to our degenerates, and you know who you are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what? But if you are a gambling degenerate, you also know better than to listen to guys who don't gamble for a living. So
darn
there you
right.
go. But that's just the way that I see it. I'm going to take the Falcons to win and to cover that 5.5-point spread, and I'm going to take the Steelers to win. And what are the Patriots favored by in this game? I didn't even have it, but it doesn't matter. I think the Steelers are going
to
win outright.
6 points, New England.
Take the Steelers and the points, but I think they're going to win outright, and I think we're going to have one heck of a fun Super Bowl. That's all the time we've got. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Drive Time is next. Stay where you are right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the dentist you look forward to seeing. The Gentle Dentist. the only dentist you're happy to come back to. The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. How can we make you smile? Call 614-431-3311.